Who's on?
Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. My special guest tonight, you guys are going to love. Chaz from Priestess Alchemy is going to explain lots of stuff that you probably have never heard of, and once you hear it, you're really going to be interested. So welcome to the show, Chaz.
Well, thank you, Dr. Valerie.
This is going to be so much fun. I mean, you know, of course, I have to get people on that I'm interested in, too. So this makes it just perfect. So first of all, before we go into what white gold is and monoatomic gold and all this kind of stuff, would you first give the listeners a little background on yourself?
Okay. Well, let's see. I did pre-med at the Honors College of the University of Michigan on a couple of scholarships, so I'm not quite an idiot. Then I did graduate work in psychology a couple places. I'm a nit short of a dual PhD in parapsychology and transpersonal psychology. Mm-hmm. I ran out of money and got into the baby trap. Other than that, I've been working as a professional chemist as a day job for many years. And then my back burner projects have always been in mining and metallurgy. This is definitely a fast forward. How I came upon this material is I did not set out by any means to find the white powder gold or study alchemy or any of that. Mm-hmm. I was actually under contract with a Canadian mining company to solve their extraction problems on a gold ore, and the extraction method kept yielding this white substance that I had no idea what it was, never encountered it before, and then I was able, finally, to be able to get it to go to metallic gold, into gold beads, and this is how I stumbled on to what this stuff really is. The gold bead, I put it on an analytical balance that reads to four decimal places, mm-hmm. and it's so sensitive, it has glass doors, you have to close the doors, make sure there's no wind and the temperature is stable, and that the weight kept going down. So I take the bead off, put it in, reset the balance to zero, put the bead back on, and the weight kept going down, 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 down. And the doors were closed. And so over the course of about 10 minutes, the balance went to four zeros, and the bead was gone.
Wow.
I mean, it was just gone. And at that point in time, I had no reference of any of David Hudson's work, of any of Lawrence Gardner's writings, nothing. All I had was I'd received about 6 months prior a junk email from a man named Barry Carter, who hosts a website called subtleenergies.com. And Barry, you could say, is collating the information on these exotic materials. And Barry's done a very good job. So I had this junk email, and I had not deleted it. I went back and started reading about this material and went, this definitely sounds like it. And then I actually had a tape of David Hudson's lectures that someone had given me, and so popped that into the VCR. playing that, and my wife and I are looking at each other, goes, boy, this sounds familiar. And then I came to the conclusion that, yes, definitely, this we might really have stumbled across it, and it was quite by accident. So then what I did, I had some of this white powder material sitting next to the analytical balance, because I still had to continue my work for the Canadian Mining Company regardless.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it by the balance. We were going out to dinner with some people that night, and as I was going through the lab, shutting everything down, there it was sitting there, and I thought to myself, I wonder what would happen if I actually ate some of this material.
Oh, my gosh.
So
I can't believe you had that thought.
Well, I'd read all this material. You know, it was very mm-hmm. fascinating to me, and I thought, well, why not?
Mm-hmm.
So ate a small amount of it, maybe, eighth of a teaspoon, something like that,
mm-hmm.
and jumped in the car, went to pick up these friends of ours, take them to dinner. And we live in south of Sedona, and we're going to dinner in Sedona. The mountain, the road between here and there is quite curvy. As I'm driving along, all of a sudden, I began to be able to hear in my head what these people in the back seat were going to say a nanosecond before they said it.
Wow.
And this kept happening.
Mm-hmm.
Then a few more miles down the road, I began to hear not only what they were going to say, but what they were thinking. So that was very interesting to know that what people thought and then what they were rehearsing in their head, what they were going to say, were quite different things.
Mm-hmm.
So it got so bad to the point that I had to turn around and say to them, don't think, don't talk, I'm having a really difficult time here.
That must have made them kind of nervous.
Well, yeah.
Since you're driving.
Yeah. But that was the beginning of it. That was how it all started.
Wow. Now, see, that really, we'll talk about this more, you know, as we get into the show a little bit more. But let me just say a few things to the people about how wild this is. First of all, this is what we're talking about is monoatomic gold, otherwise known as white gold. And you might have seen things for or against it. It's about 50-50 on the web there by different people. And nobody really wants to come out and say whether we should do it or not, apparently. So we're going to be discussing, you know, various reasons why you might want to do it or, you know, whatever. So so the reason I invited Chaz on the show, listeners, is because he actually makes this stuff. And I have some of the products, and they are awesome products. And coupled with my room, the holographic projector room, you know, it really intensifies what you're doing in there. So hearing this telepathy thing makes perfectly good sense to me, and we'll talk about the blood-brain barrier and all that kind of stuff in a little bit. But also I want to let the listeners know, if they're listening live now on Tuesday, the May 15th, that you can call in and ask us questions. Toll-free numbers are 877-876-5227 for the U.S., and for Canada, 888-815-9756. And the direct line for international is 530-876-3222. And you can also come in on the BBS Fast Chat if you're a little bit too shy and ask your question, and I will relay that to Chaz. You know, I want the people to understand, Chaz, that, first of all, you're a scientist, and that, secondly, you came on to something that most people know nothing about that could have some far-reaching implications for us as a society, and especially in this ascension process. So I'm hoping the listeners are really kind of sitting up on the edge of their seats and getting ready to take some notes here. So, okay, that's my soapbox. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, let's see what we need to extend it to not only the what I call the quote-unquote white form
mm-hmm.
of gold, but also the other precious elements,
mm-hmm.
Platinum, iridium, palladium. And also, according to Barry Carter, his writings, also to the other transition elements. So it's... We can focus mainly on the precious elements. That's what Lawrence has written about mainly, and also he was referencing David Hudson's work several years ago. So where do we go to this? If people have read Lawrence's work, which is Lost Secrets of the Sacred Ark, and also Lawrence Gardner has written in Nexus magazine, I found one today which was April-May 2006, and Lawrence has done a very good job of putting this in, looking up the historical references to this, mainly going back to the Egyptians, and also the instance of Moses on Mount Horeb, where, now Mount Horeb is where they discovered the Temple of Hathor, the Egyptian goddess Hathor, which is where the Egyptian manufacturing of these white powder elements went on for about 1,500 years. So they manufactured it in Mount Horeb on the Sinai Peninsula and then shipped it to the temples in Egypt. And this material was exclusively for the use of the pharaoh, immediate family, and the priests and priestesses. And what the literature says, the Egyptian literature says, is that it granted them paranormal powers, that life expectancy was average in the neighborhood of perhaps like 300 years. And if you look at a lot of the Old Testament writings, that the life expectancy, lifespans of many of these people in the Old Testament was many, many hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So how did that happen? Were they genetically much different than we are? Or were they supplementing with something that currently we don't have?
Which makes a lot of sense, you know, from a medical standpoint, you know, because systems don't change that quickly, unless you're talking fruit flies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, you know, they don't change all that quickly. And so the adaptation or the loss of that ability to be that long-lived, you know, that's kind of suspicious. So I agree with you. It probably had something to do with some kind of element that we're not familiar with today.
Yeah, so, well, let's see. Just in case people have read Lawrence's works, I think that maybe we can put a few things into context, and that's based on my personal experience. Like I said, I have seen the gold disappear, and this is one of the things that Lawrence referenced. The other thing is that this material, when heated, it gives off a tremendous amount of light relative to the amount of energy that you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done this on the lab bench repeatedly, where we'll take a hydrogen torch, which normally burns at a relatively low temperature, but depending on the material that you're trying to burn with it, the temperature will climb.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a hydrogen torch, this thing, imagine like a flame the size of let's say the cylinder of a ballpoint pen, even smaller than that. Very, very narrow, tiny flame on a very, very small bead of this material, not even 500 milligrams of this material.
Mm-hmm.
And as you got it hotter and hotter, at first it wouldn't really heat up. It would take forever to get it to heat up. And that once it began to glow, then the light at a certain point, a certain temperature, the amount of light that it would give off, it would just illuminate the entire room. I mean, just brilliantly.
Wow.
Like, imagine four quartz lights in a small room. And this is all just coming off this very, very tiny bead of material lit up by a pen tip point of a hydrogen flame.
Wow.
So I guess the reason I'm saying this is that this is not merely just historical data that Lawrence has pulled out and just placed out there for people to believe in. I've actually experienced these things.
And that's fascinating to me ever since I read about it. And, you know, and of course, being a physician, you know, I'm trying to find out, is it good for us? Is it bad for us? You know, what's the real truth other than just, you know, people's opinions one way or the other, you know, couched in as to whether it's an Illuminati plot or the pharaohs didn't know what they're doing, or maybe they did, or maybe it's us. And I mean, there's all these different theories out there. But the science of it, I think when I first read about it deeply, it was about Hudson's work.
Yeah.
And about how he had just taken some plain old Arizona soil and extracted out this stuff. And it didn't even start as gold. It didn't start as like iron and something really common.
It analyzes as an iron aluminum silicate.
Mm-hmm.
Is what it normally analyzes as. And then Hudson, he had some deep pockets, so he spent a lot of money researching this stuff. I think he spent about somewhere around $3 million. And what he did was he sent it to the Russian Academy of Sciences, and they had some experience with plasma and with spectroscopy,
mm-hmm.
where they put it in a plasma arc, which is, plasma is the fourth state of matter, where the electrons are no longer associated with a given nucleus.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got free electrons, and this flame burns at extremely high temperature, 5,000 degrees centigrade, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was that they put this material into this plasma arc, got it super hot, and they had to hold it in there for 5 minutes. At the end of 5 minutes, the spectroscope no longer was reading iron, aluminum, and silica. It started reading rhodium, platinum, gold, iridium, palladium. All of a sudden, boom, there's all these precious elements. So where did they come from? Is it a function of the arc actually changed them, or what did the high temperature suddenly reveal something that's been hidden all this time in this sand, this Arizona sand?
Yeah, this is fascinating, and you know, what if the plasma itself was able to bring something in from other dimensions? Even, I mean, there's so many possibilities. You know, I just had the opportunity to talk to Susan Joy Renison last month about plasma physics.
Uh-huh.
And about how they're just now starting to discover all these amazing things about our universe that kind of reveal what we thought of as mysticism to be actual science. We just don't have a handle on it yet. So when I started talking with you about this and reading what I read, yeah, the question is, where does that come from? And if it's just heat, why haven't we noticed this before?
Right. Well, let me put something into a little bit of context in terms of the ancient alchemy in talking about this material. They called it the hidden stone. And I found this quote, and they called it the hidden stone, but it was hidden in plain sight everywhere. So this material is all around us. And I think that these materials are in the same form as what plants will take from a soil. And you can't analyze the soil for these materials at all. But the plant somehow, and different plants, of course, will manifest, let's use the word manifest, different minerals or different elements out of the exact same soil. So these materials are there. This is the form that plants uptake them.
Mm-hmm.
So then animals will eat the plants, or we will eat the plants directly, and then absorb these elements that previously no one knew were there.
Mm-hmm.
So where I'm going with this is that I think that this material is actually a very essential nutrient, and that our civilization, I mean, especially due to the fact that we know that our soils are depleted in mineralization. And we as a society are trying to sustain our lives based on plants that are totally deficient in mineralization. So that I think that this material is an essential ingredient in diet, and that it's a function of maybe how much that you take of this material, and depends on what happens to you.
Mm-hmm.
In Lawrence's book, there's a picture of, and it's actually on my website, if anybody out there wants to go to it, it's www.priestessalchemy.com. And the picture on the front page is of the goddess Hathor handing this imbibing instrument to the pharaoh. And behind the goddess is the treasurer, the pharaoh's treasurer, carrying this cone of this white powder gold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this cone is pretty good size. Imagine like a big cottage cheese container mm-hmm. of this white gold. So if the pharaoh is ingesting this much of it, you can guarantee that he's plentifully supplied with this missing ingredient in our nutrition.
Hmm. Interesting.
I hope I'm not jumping around too much, Valerie.
No, I don't know about the listeners out there, but you know, when you start thinking about the history and what we've been told, and all this new information that's coming out, and you know, about how they were able to do things that we can't even fathom at this point. You know, if you're taking a large amount of this stuff and it's an essential nutrient for your brain,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know that yet, but if it is, and you're taking a large amount of it, then it would, in effect, supercharge your brain, right?
Well, exactly. And I was giving this some thought, Valerie, just before this phone call,
mm-hmm.
and that is one of the things that Hudson discovered was that brains, mammal brains, are made up of between 5% and 15% rhodium and iridium.
Really?
Really.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So imagine this. Okay, if your average mammal brain is 5% rhodium and iridium, and remember, this is the form of rhodium and iridium that can be measured, okay? And let's jump back. At the Russian Academy of Sciences, this material would not read for rhodium and iridium mm-hmm. or platinum or gold or anything, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if the mammal brain is 5% of rhodium and iridium that can be read on instruments, now if you supplement with monatomic form of rhodium and iridium and your brain is absorbing this material, now what happens to you? You see where I'm going with that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, because the brain absorbs it.
Uh-huh.
Now, to put this into context, I'm constantly involved in researching and developing new forms of this material and how to complex it in a form that's absorbable. This new material that I've been working with is... When I take it, it almost immediately affects vision. Vision becomes sharper, colors become deeper in saturation, and there's a greater sense of depth of field. It's almost as if there's another dimension added to that.
Mm-hmm.
So it must be going directly into the brain if it's affecting the visual cortex. Like that.
Yeah, and if it's going directly into the brain, that means it's passing the blood-brain barrier, so it's small enough to get through, and there's not that many things that do that. And I can tell you, with your new one that you're doing, I definitely felt an immediate shift. Now, I've been kind of busy moving the office, so you know I haven't really had time to sit down and really meditate with it or anything. And then I took it, and I went immediately into the projector room. And had all kinds of interesting things happening. I mean, stuff happens anyway, but I was more aware of what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to see a little bit more clearly as far as, you know, other dimensional things that I wouldn't normally have seen because I was too left brain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You get stuck in your left brain, you know, it's a little bit different. But I could definitely tell a difference, way different than the other ones, although the other ones are nice too. But this one was more immediate. And I even got dizzy, you know, and normally I don't get dizzy from the energy at all.
Uh-huh.
You know, I walk in, I'm used to being in this energy. But that I felt.
Well,
so that's telling you something's going on there.
Uh-huh. Well, when you say dimensional shift, I mean, we both live in Sedona, so you know, this probably makes sense to us, but for the people out there, what does that mean to you when you say dimensional shift?
Yeah, that's a good point. We should explain that to them. If you're not in woo-woo land like we are, a dimensional shift is anything that seems out of 3D, you know, the third-dimensional world. So, for instance, you know, if you listen to Coast to Coast also, then you've probably heard about shadow people and you know, you've heard about ghosts and things like that. So a dimensional shift is a shift into any other dimension that is going to allow you to see something other than your ordinary third-dimensional world. And here in Sedona, you know, we have these very strong vortexes and things, and in fact, the projector room creates a huge vortex also. So sometimes you can actually see, it's almost like the air is water. You can see waves in the air, and it's not heat waves, but it's similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can see kind of like a little bit of a shifting there, and sometimes you can see through walls. You can, you know, you can see down through the floor. I mean,
yep.
That's dimensional shifting. And we are much more than these third-dimensional bodies. So so for those of you out there that haven't had those experiences, oh, boy, are they fun.
Well, Valerie, let me ask you this. Now, since we're main, you know, most of us operate on left brain, and we're using our eyes to function as far as, you know, business and, you know, analytical work or just, you know, watching the boob tube. Now, do you think that we're actually shifting into another dimensional perspective, or is it that this third eye that everybody talks about is somehow opening up and we become aware of this other dimension?
That's a good question. I think it is a matter of awareness. It's wherever you focus your consciousness. And I think that sometimes we just kind of unconsciously become more conscious.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what the trigger is, you know, and well, I definitely know that your latest batch of stuff is a trigger, but normally, you know, most folks go through their day and they just don't notice things, especially if they've got the blinders on.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that would not be our BBS listeners. They're pretty aware. But I find that a lot of times you can have a dimensional shift without even realizing that it's happened until you notice the behavior of people around you. And then you realize you're not in their world anymore. And I would liken that to the Celestine prophecy, when he talks about how there were different times when they became invisible. And I've noted that, you know, when that kind of shift happens, and you do this as part of, you know, shamanic stuff, but when that happens, when you're looking at other people around you, you don't know that you've shifted. Now, I think what we do is we move our awareness. I think we move our consciousness kind of up and down a scale. I think it's a frequency thing, you know. You shift your consciousness to a certain frequency, and then that's where you are. But it's not necessarily where the normal people in the third-dimensional world will see you. And what I've noticed during those kinds of phases is that the other people that I'm looking at look really strange.
Oh, yeah.
They look like puppets. You know, they have very coarse features.
Uh-huh.
And they look like they're not alive. It's very strange. You know, and the closest I can liken it to is seeing a film of these small humanoids, extraterrestrials, they were thinking, but they came in a little spaceship, you know, and they got out, and there's actually film of this from Project Blue Book that one of my friends had years ago and was actually one of the contactees of this stuff. And there were these little 3-foot-tall humanoids, very, very coarse features.
Mm-hmm.
They looked like us, but very coarse. And the only thing I've ever seen that compares to that is when that dimensional shift occurs and I'm looking out at other people. So that tells me that there is something going on, some kind of a shift, and I think it's the consciousness.
Right. Well, see, that's exactly what the Egyptians referred to of what this, where this material would take you.
Mm-hmm.
And they called it, well, they called this material, the way it's spelled is M-F-K-Z-T, and how that's pronounced, because the Egyptians did not write with vowels, it's pronounced Muf-Kuz-T.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this just happens to be the mantra for this material. And so what they said would happen when they took this material is that they would go into the field of Mufkusti. So, are we talking about the Lynn McTaggart field? And so exactly how does this material facilitate that dimensional shift?
Yeah. That's a good question.
Well, here's my personal take on how this material works.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that it's, and this is what some of what Lawrence was writing about, and that is they've discovered this material in interstellar dust. They've analyzed it coming out of stars that actually our entire world, our entire cosmos, is made of this stuff. It's the basic substance of our planet, of all the planets. So, and then with reference to quantum physics and our string theory people, that our world is made up of consciousness. It's all just consciousness. So this material, I think, just might be the first little jump from consciousness into physical matter, our physical 3D matter as we normally understand it, that we've been taught it.
Hmm.
3D matter in the sense of chemistry and physics. So given the fact that, okay, this is our hypothesis, that this is this transitional material, so that it is actually holding consciousness, and in my experience, it's a transceiver. It will absorb energy, and it will transmit energy of consciousness, of thought, idea.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take this material, then what's happening is you're absorbing, you've got more of this conscious bridge energy, let's use the word like bridge transitional energy, that you're taking into your physical form. Now, what you do with that extra energy, that's up to you. That's up to your personal will. And most of the people nowadays think of it, you know, use the word intent. It's not really my favorite word. I like personal will, because that it takes it home. So you've taken this energy into your physical being. Now, you can, what are you going to do? How are you going to manifest it? Now, given the fact that it is consciousness, it also has intelligence. So it's the inherent intelligence of our universe. So now you've got intelligent consciousness that you've now absorbed into your physical being. So now what are you going to do with it? Or what is it going to do to you?
Yeah, that is the question.
So if you want me to take a little bit further here, what we've experienced, we've been in this business now for I think about 5 years, and we have a variety of different products, topical products, oral, I call them nano-nutritional supplements.
Mm-hmm.
And what our people are reporting out there is that the very same product that I've developed as a skincare, skin serum, people, yeah, it's making their skin really good, but hey, they're reporting that there's very significant things going on with arthritis symptoms, neurological symptoms, neurological damage from burns, scarring. Mm-hmm. It's like all these across the board different reports from the very same material that, hey, started out as skincare. So how does this happen? Mm-hmm. We even had one person, because we call the product Cleopatra's Milk, mm-hmm. They thought it was like something you put in salad dressing.
Well, it smells edible.
Well, it is. It's all totally edible. It's all FDA food quality stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, all these different things are happening. And so how do you explain that? How can you take a substance that manifests in so many different ways? And what we've concluded is that the first thing, because it has intelligence, is it's going to do what you need it to do. It's going to look at your bioenergy system, and it's going to go in there almost like a computer repair program. It's going to look at the computer program, your physical computer program, that has maybe differed somewhat slightly from your initial blueprint, your initial, call it astral blueprint, from which your body was then built upon. You have to start with a blueprint. So the material will analyze your physical being, match it up to your blueprint, find the areas that you're lacking, or there's some error in the code of the program, and it will go in there and start to address those issues. Now, if you take your personal intent and then take that energy and want to put it in other directions, now that may or may not happen. Like, let's say you want to manifest a stack of $100 bills. Well, that may happen, but the energy, this conscious energy, is first going to work on your system. It may be thinking, well, yeah, I know this guy wants a whole stack of $100 bills, but you know, we have to address these other things first. There's more important things going on than just money. Mm-hmm. So I guess this is where this kind of thread it is going to come back around to, is what is the nature of this substance, and how do we look at it and put it into a framework that we can understand with our normal trained 3D senses?
Yeah, that is the question. How do we understand this? And I can definitely say that you have come up with some really interesting things. I would like you to, we've got like about, 20 minutes left. What I'd like you to do is talk a little bit about what you guys have found in the slides.
In the blood work?
Yeah, in the blood work, the little critters that are in there and things.
Oh!
And people should go to your website and take a look at those, because they're really amazing.
Well, okay. Well, with respect, and this goes right back to the intelligence that I was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the slides, and unfortunately, I can't reach my laptop or my the other computer from this hard line. But one of the slides is of a kind of a rainbow-colored assemblage of this material that kind of looks like a brain, the way it's folded.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and some of the other slides, if you go to the website, you click on the research tab, and it will take you to a real quick AVI that was over 16 hours of blood that actually vortexed up off the slide and jumped onto the microscope lens.
Whoa.
It jumped. Okay, anyway, that's one of the images, but there's a whole collection of slides in there. Now, going back to this brain image, my research people in Michigan had just finished some of the work, had just emailed me all these images. I just printed them out, and this is one of these synchronicity things. This friend of ours, John Martin, MD, PhD of USC, University of Southern California, just drives up in front of the house, walks up, he sees all these pictures, his jaw drops open, and he goes, oh my God, I'll be right back. Goes to the trunk of his car, pulls out his briefcase, and pulls out this his papers that he had written and the images that he had taken of it, the parallels were just amazing. Of what it was he was working with a population in California that had gotten encephalitis. Now, how they got encephalitis, we don't really know. But it just so happened that about 30 people in a very small town of about 100 or 200 all happened to get encephalitis. So we're not in coast to coast, so I'm not going to go down any of those roads. Now, what John found is that their brains were still functioning, that the encephalitis, the nature of it is it starves the energy out of the brain. But the brain cells had somehow managed to generate their own energy. So when John looked at these images, these microscope images, and relative to his hypothesis is that the brain cells were generating their own energy. They had created their own battery. And so in looking at this my material, he was saying, well, this must be the power supply that was powering these people's brains with encephalitis. Just amazing. And then some of the other structures. So if we go drop back to Hudson's work, let's say that these are these high spin elements that are carrying their own energy source, then they begin to assemble themselves, and based on the fact that they have this intelligence, well, in a brain that's starved of energy, they'll make their own batteries. Let's say in a case where you've got neurological degeneration, somehow they will begin to assemble new sheaths for the nerves, or assemble new nerves. Mm-hmm. Now, don't quote me on this, because I don't want the FDA to come out and shoot me. But this is what people are reporting, and this is what John Martin's research has demonstrated. So it's just pretty phenomenal. It kind of derailed there for a minute, Valerie, to bring me back.
Okay. One of the things that, as you're talking about this, you know, it reminds me of the you know, the whole scare about the alternate cellular energy that, you know, people are talking about in chemtrails and such, too. You know, and they're going, well, we don't know if this is good. We don't know if it's bad. You know, and it gives rise to this whole theory that the chemtrails have nanobots in them. And you know, and now it's been proven that they basically are just, you know, worms and things, but parasites. But not the ACEs. The ACEs are made by our own cells, as you were just saying, to create alternate sources of energy so that the cells can continue to function.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this reminds me also of pleomorphic theory, where they took cells from people and they found that there was a progression of little critters that appeared in the cells the longer the cells aged, and that the end result of all that was cancer.
Uh-huh.
And if they didn't keep it alkaline. So all this stuff is really fascinating to me. And I'm looking at these monatomic substances as something that we truly may be missing. And this is maybe why we can't regenerate limbs and all of this other kind of stuff.
Well, let me speak to the nanobot subject.
Mm-hmm.
Now, What I did do, there's a whole other section that was up on the website for years, and I was advised by a person that works for our wonderful beneficent government to take it off the site.
Mm-hmm.
But what we were seeing, I can describe it, and what we were seeing is that there are nanobots in this material,
mm-hmm,
that were doing the assembling. But remember that my material, the way it was interacting with the human organism, the bioenergy system, is producing beneficent results. It's reassembling according to the astral, the etheric blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the chemtrail material is destructive nanobots, then perhaps what we might have going on is a little battle of the nanobots.
And what if the materials in this monatomic form, what if those materials and the lack of them are what have caused the degradation of DNA over time?
Absolutely, Dr. Valerie, absolutely. Here's something that I want to throw in. I think when the human organism was first engineered, you know, wherever you think that engineering came from, I don't care. But we were never engineered to live in this quote unquote civilization where we're completely depleting of mineralization. We're completely bombarded by electromagnetic fields. We're never engineered for this.
Yeah.
Let's say if we initially came out of an ocean environment or a swamp environment, and that originally we were rolling around in a lot more mud, a lot more salt water that's completely loaded with this material. Mud is completely loaded with the material, and we were absorbing it by osmosis, plus eating natural foods and animals that were raised on this highly enriched natural material, then, yeah, we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable to these attacks. So we can only hope that by supplementing with this high-energy material, and I don't care where you get it. I don't care if you're pulling it out of quinton from the ocean, or you're growing your own organics, or you're buying it from me. I don't care. But just as long as people get it through their head that they have to really get on track physically in order to survive civilization, and not merely survive what our wonderful, beneficent NWO government is doing for us.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I'm constantly looking for something that is going to stop these horrible effects. You know, I'm seeing more and more people popping up with strange things, and you know, you kind of look at them and you go, oof, boy, no clue what that is, you know, or you look at something and you go, well, you know, this is fine, and maybe it's not, or you think something's not fine, and it is, and, you know, things are not the way they used to be, you know, and the medical community is going crazy with this stuff because they don't know what to do about it. And so here we are in a state of kind of unknown transition. You know, we kind of have a few hints of where we're going to, but we don't really know. And we don't know if these changes that are happening are good or not. But I can tell you that the best way that I've found to take care of those questions is to muscle test.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, use your intuition. You know, my intuition was to use your products because I think they're wonderful, you know, but I have that intuition where my body didn't draw back from it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that's important to me because I can feel when I go to reach for something whether I should be doing it or not. And so I didn't have any of that kind of reservation about it. And I mean, I'm still healthy. I'm still here in spite of all the crap that's happened to me in the last 6 months. And in spite of all the chemtrails and everything else. And meanwhile, I'm taking care of other people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, it kind of behooves us each to figure out what's going to work for us. And the stuff that you're doing, I mean, there's nobody else doing this that I know of.
Well, there actually are a handful of people out there that are doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to take all the credit myself by any means. I think I'm just fortunate enough because of my educational background, the fact that I work in the nutraceutical industry for another company, that I'm just able to kind of get it more together.
Yeah,
and you're asking, you know, there are some of that initial microscope work on the website, and we have more coming. We're doing we have an ongoing study right now at the University of Oklahoma School of Acupuncture. We have another study going on working with some highly toxic people in Santa Clarita, California that have tumors and cancers and all kinds of things that my material is working on. And we also have another study starting with Lyme disease in detoxing people from viri and bacteria from Lyme disease. Mm-hmm. Then we also have some independent reporting going on with fibromyalgia. Just a lot of really exciting things going on. And I think as we progress and people, you know, stay tuned to the site every once in a while, and as we get new information coming up, and we always post it. And then in all the products on the website, we have user reports. So you can take any product, go look at the user reports, and look at the variety of different results that people are having. And it's just amazing. And so I think if people feel that maybe this material might extend to them, then, you know, give it a shot. I never make any promises by any means. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely not going to buck the AMA or butt heads with the FDA on any of this stuff. But and that's why I'd really like to bump it back to the material itself. Mm-hmm. I don't want to take credit for it. Mm-hmm. The material has intelligence. You have intelligence. You have personal will. And so are it part of your personal will, are you willing to surrender a little bit to the intelligence of the material and develop an interaction, become more interactive instead of us trying to dominate our world, to allow this material to teach us how to become interactive the way we're supposed to be. But the American Indians, we live in the Southwest, and to me, the Hopi Indians are my models of how to interact with the world around us. That's kind of on a roll there. Now, and the Hopi definitely talked about being in contact with extraterrestrials.
Yeah, they did. Well, most of most of the Native American cultures have.
Yeah.
And it was quite a common thing for them. And I think that whether they come from outer space or from inner space, whichever, you know, or maybe all of them, you know, why would we want to put the blinders on and not be a part of this whole civilization of the universe? And, you know, why would we try to deny these physical bodies in the third dimension of the very things that they need in order to survive in the third dimension? And, you know, I've seen all this stuff about Breatharians and everything else and, you know, eating this and not eating that and all these different things. And I think we're capable of much more than we give ourselves credit for. Well, I know for sure we are. But, you know, here we are in 3D, and we're putting up with all these things that are in our environment. And if one of the things that we're lacking is monatomic elements, then we're not going to get better unless we take those monatomic elements, right?
Yeah. It's natural. And if you think of the one thing and that I think would most impact us is in this transition of our civilization is something that would facilitate the interaction, not just with our Earth, but each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the other aspects of these elements is that it involves non-local quantum coherence.
Yeah. Holographics and the non-local mind and all that
stuff.
This is something that's real important. I'm going to have to kind of cut it short here because we've run out of time.
Okay.
But what I want to make sure of is that people have your contact information. So go ahead and give that.
Okay. The website web address is priestess, priestessalchemy. .com, and take a look. There's the email button on the website. Look it over, and feel free to email me if you have any questions, and I'd always try to answer almost every email. Sometimes it's boggling, but yeah, I'd be happy to try to interface with everybody that I can.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are going to be interested. And also, you can reach priestessalchemy.com from my website. There's a link there under Dr. Valerie Recommends. And any questions you guys have, if you want to know about the skincare products or something and just want to know what I think of them, you know, give me a holler. You can call me up, you can email me, whatever. So I want to thank you very much, Chaz, for being on the show and for this incredible work that you're doing. And I think that you're going to have an awful lot of interest from a lot of the BBS listeners fairly soon now as we start to, you know, get a little bit more information on all this. And I'm very interested in finding out what the studies show. And I'd like to post them on my website, you know, as soon as you get some more information.
As soon as we get the blood work images, you'll be the first person to get them.
Awesome. Okay.
Well, and thank you, Dr. Valerie. This has been a very enjoyable conversation.
Yeah, for me too. I mean, I love learning about
this. And I would love to maybe do this again, and we can take it out a little bit further and take it into where we're going in terms of silica-based beings versus carbon-based.
That's awesome. Let's do it. So we'll schedule it for maybe sometime in June.
Sure.
So, okay. Well, I will talk to you in the next... in the next 10 minutes, off the air.
Okay.
Thank you for being on. Thank you, listeners.
Okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
And as always, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.